Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome. You've got
digital folklore.
Hello and welcome to another after the episode discussion. This is Perry Carpenter, and today I have with me, of course, as always, the ever-present Mason Amadeus.
Hi, Perry. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah,
sounds like
of course.
This is, why does this sound way too formal? Of a sudden?
Yeah, happy to join in. Happy to be a guest on the show here.
Yeah, well. And if you are just joining us and you've not yet listened to episode 6, which was called Statistically Conscious, go back and listen to that now. Otherwise, you're going to be totally lost, or I don't know, you just won't care about the episode as much.
Subjecting yourself to spoilers.
Yeah. Who wants to do that? Nobody wants to do that. Go back and listen now.
So episode 6, Statistically Conscious, was largely about artificial intelligence, right?
Was it?
I think so.
Okay.
It feels like it.
Yeah, I think it was.
We conducted those interviews a while ago.
We did. No, it was about artificial intelligence because that is the topic du jour and has been for the past year about since GPT-3 was released in chat form through OpenAI. It was on OpenAI's playground environment before that, and a lot of companies were starting to use large language models before that and put wrappers around it, but then OpenAI released that in a new interface and it kind of took the world by storm and made everybody simultaneously really, really excited about the possibilities and also very, very creeped out and afraid.
And we did have before that, you know, like DALL-E and the beginnings of Midjourney, and which I think Midjourney uses Stable Diffusion, right? Stable Diffusion.
I don't think Midjourney is Stable Diffusion. So there's like three or four major companies out there that are doing this. Stable Diffusion is a product as well.
Oh, I thought it was the method of generation.
It probably is, and I'm probably very ignorant about these things. But the ones that you can go to, there's a Stable Diffusion. There's DALL-E, which is owned by OpenAI. So it's the same thing as ChatGPT at this point because they've all been pulled in together. And then there is Midjourney, which a lot of people are also familiar with. And there's pluses and minuses for all of these.
I remember that those were sort of the first thing that were eye-catching. And then when ChatGPT really took off into the mainstream, then we were all really talking about AI.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of the art piece of this, so if you are using DALL-E or if you use OpenAI and ChatGPT, you can in the ChatGPT mobile interface now, or even the web one, because I did that the other day, you can type in what you want to create an image of, and ChatGPT will then create a prompt, a DALL-E prompt for that, and then submit that to DALL-E, and you get the output.
I'm fine. We're playing
good.
Robot telephone for making art.
It interprets your prompt, creates its own prompt, and then does its own thing.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And Bing is doing that too. Like, because now there's that whole Bing.
That's through OpenAI as well.
As though Bing is setting itself as your default search wasn't annoying enough. Now there's a whole giant pop-out panel.
But again, that's all OpenAI.
And it's all really cool, actually. Like,
it is.
For all of the downsides.
If you get it when it's actually working. Because as soon as they announced that and started putting it in everything, you started hitting all these server limitations.
Not to get too far off topic, but something that like I am surprised doesn't exist yet, and it exists sort of in various forms, but none that are very user friendly. I'm just surprised it's not the first thing that's been jumped on is a true virtual assistant AI that can like take notes or search your computer for a file or have the kind of operability with your device. Like most of them, you know, can answer questions or give you like information or generate art. But I want one where I can be like, can you tell me what I have to get done this week? Or like, help me break down my schedule. Oh, can you make this a note?
I'm seeing more and more things that are basically OpenAI wrappers where people are taking like ChatGPT or the GTP engine or their own version of an LLM and wrapping hardware and software around that. So I've seen notebooks that do it. So they translate all your writing and will do summaries of stuff and extrapolations of that and integrate with your calendar and anything else you want to give it access to. And then I saw a piece of hardware today that's essentially like a Star Trek communicator that you pin to your your clothing, and you can just tap it, and you can do commands. It can have access to your phone, do phone calls, or read your voicemails, look at your calendar, recommend stuff based on all your emails and texts, search your full history, and do stuff. So,
see, that's what I want.
I'll find the ad for that and send it to you.
Yeah, please do. I want like an assistant, you know, I need that. And if you're going to have all my data anyway, I mean, screw it. Just take all of it, right?
Exactly.
I know I'm the product. It's fine. I'm not that interesting. Just kidding. Obviously, I have a lot of reservations and fears around that. I'm just being brazen for comedic effect.
Well, I mean, it's fun to think about the possibilities. Mm-hmm. And it's continually surprising. Like we did that little bit at the end of our last after the episode when we talked to ChatGPT and saw how human it can feel. And it's more and more like that. I've gone through a couple things now where I would literally have it quiz me on stuff. And then like in the way that you quiz it, you have it ask you a question and it's checking the way that you answer that to see how it needs to follow up.
Oh, interesting. That's are you like doing it to like reinforce like a flashcard style learning something?
Yeah,
or what?
I'm just trying to test it more than anything. But yeah, essentially that. So like in the cybersecurity context, I would say something like, hey, quiz me on the 10 most important things that you think I need to know about cybersecurity, and phrase that as a question and evaluate my responses. And then it'd come out and say, explain social engineering and give three examples.
As a cybersecurity expert, how good of a job does it do? Like for you, are the questions it asks insightful and good, or is it really basic? Or
it's fine. I mean, it's not necessarily the most insightful, but at the same time, I don't know that I was prompting it for those more nuanced types of things. So what I've noticed about it is it does behave with some adult learning theory built in. And so if you answer and you give your answer and I say, phishing is blah, 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 it will say, very good job. You did X. And then it will go ahead and give its explanation of what that thing is too. So you hear it again and it fills in any additional nuance that you may have missed that way.
So it's good at the context of that then.
Yeah, it's good at the context and it will give some interesting positive reinforcements. Like I say, good job, or you nailed it type of stuff.
That is interesting.
Thank you, computer.
I know. And there's it's not fair that feels patronizing, but it feels a little patronizing.
Yeah.
But it's not the AI's fault, you know?
Well, I mean, the other thing that we mentioned last time, I think, and we probably even heard in some of the responses, is that while it's processing, the way that they've done the voice stuff is really human, because as it's processing, searching for the next string of tokens, it will add ums and do little vocal disfluencies to cover for the fact that it's searching. And today I was doing one and it did cough.
Really?
Yeah.
It coughed?
To me, it sounded like a cough. I think it was a cough.
That's wild. I love that is part of how
and
it
so
is programmed.
And so if anybody here is an OpenAI developer and has worked on that and can confirm that I actually heard a cough in that, reach out to
Kudos.
Us. We would love to talk to you about like all the whys and the whatnots and the how fors and everything associated with that, because it's freaking brilliant.
But
also a little bit interesting
uncanny.
In a freaky way. But I like it.
That's firmly in the uncanny valley. I like that too. Like that kind of design is fascinating.
It's uncomfortable because it's not uncomfortable enough for me.
Yeah, it's too good.
It's too good.
So speaking of all of these things, I mean, it's kind of like discussion of the episode, but in terms of discussing the episode itself, do you have any big takeaways from it? Like, what was the biggest thing for you?
Oh, man. Both Lev and John Loden are extremely insightful in the way that they think about AI. And I think that that's really cool, because so often in the world that I'm in, you hear AI talk, it was spoken about it from a security or technology perspective. But it's really nice to know that people are thinking about AI from a philosophical and human condition perspective. And I thought that they did a great job bringing that to the table.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that, but you're right. We did kind of focus on that side of things, because of course we did in the context of folklore.
Yeah.
I think I really liked when we had them breaking down how an AI sees the world and how it answers things. Because I think that's important to understand, to not be as scared of this thing that seems like magic. And I think particularly with the challenges that AI presents morally, philosophically, and also logistically, understanding it is an important thing to do. So I hope that that was helpful to people. It was helpful to me talking to them.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the Chinese Room experiment that John Loden talked about was super insightful and on point for this as well, because we do have a hard time understanding how can this thing that I'm conversing with not understand anything that it's saying back.
Right. Yeah, that was such a cool parallel.
And for some reason, I had never heard that, even though I was a philosophy major. So I don't know where either my reading or my education went awry, but it sounds like I should have heard that when I was getting my education, but that was the first time I'd heard it.
And I don't know how I hadn't heard it, because I feel like over half of my friends were somehow philosophy majors, which is weird.
Right.
I have a disproportionate amount of philosophy major friends. Now that I didn't know you were a philosophy major too.
I was.
There's obviously a lot more meat on the AI bones too that we can tear into probably in later seasons. Because I mean, as it continues to develop, and then we didn't even talk about Loeb with these guys really.
No, we did touch on, I think, AI and creativity, but we didn't talk about some of the AI cryptids and other bits of folklore that are coming out.
Something that we've heard from a few people is they want us to do some more case study style episodes. So I think that could be interesting to just narrow down on, like, all right, well, let's tell the story about Loeb. Let's talk about this one thing, kind of like we did with Slenderman. I think that'll be a fun thing that we should revisit in the future.
Yeah, we could make a whole, either do a couple of those every season or make a whole season just of case studies.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun. And also, if you who are listening think that's a good idea, let us know.
Yeah,
that'd be a fun challenge.
If you have thoughts about like what you would hope you would hear and see in season 3, let us know.
Yeah.
Because we're having to think about that now.
Yeah. And we have some stuff lined up that'll be really fun and very flexible. And I can't say anything else other than that. Unless you have something to say about that, Perry.
Other than fun, flexible folklore sounds pretty cool.
Fun, flexible folklore weirdly sounds like a yoga thing, like yoga and Reiki.
If anybody's wanting to make a folklore related yoga class. For the fun, flexible folklore.
Fun, flexible folklore yoga.
You could call it lore on the floor.
Oh, lore on the floor. You could do like all sorts of, I can't wait to figure out what yoga position is a tulpa. You know what I mean?
Right. Anyway, sorry about that.
You have to just believe that you can do it. Really, like, believe
it's
it.
It's the power of positive thinking.
If I, because I'm built like a noodle. Anytime I do yoga, I'm Slender Man. So I guess I'm already there.
I am manifesting a downward facing dog right now.
Yeah. The next section is sound design elements and fun quirks, and I only have two tiny notes for sound design, because this one is pretty minimal. The first one is I hate footsteps, and I've been using them a lot more lately, and I don't like them, and I've never liked them.
I remember you used to rail about footsteps a lot. I'm a big footsteps fan. I put footsteps in everything, and I have my favorite sets from libraries that I pulled and know how to use in creative ways.
I would love for you to share with me which ones those are.
My favorite one that I always use is like footstep crunching on snow. It's my default footstep for anytime somebody is in a like a concrete room and they're getting up out of a chair. It's that initial crunch impact.
They are flexible. That snow, it's very meaty, the snow steps. There's a lot of texture. I find that they're often not mixed well and they're tough to get placed right. And I feel like most of the time they're not close enough to where the camera would be to be picked up.
Right.
But sometimes when I like in my decision tree of sound design, there's that first layer that's like, what is the camera picking up? But then what supersedes that is there something I need to convey in this scene, even if it doesn't make logical sense for the camera to be picking it up? And so there was a couple of times we were walking back and forth to Digby's closet. And I was like, I guess footsteps make sense.
Yeah. And the thing in that, too, though, is when you're designing for footsteps, you're not necessarily designing for the reality of footsteps.
Yeah.
You're just trying to get across the, at least for me, when I do it, I'm just trying to get across the idea. So like if I have two people walking, I'm not really doing two sets of footsteps so much because that's just too much for people to hear.
Yeah. And when you layer them, the timing becomes very important because they can... If they're exactly opposite, it's far too rhythmic.
Right.
If they're at the same time, it's weird. If they don't overlap in just the right way or just the right time, like often
You almost splitting. Want to put like a delay on, like a little minimal slapback delay just to make it sound like two people are kind of walking in sequence.
Yeah, I fully go for the layering approach. I gave you a heavier set of steps than me.
I am heavier than you.
I know that you're the same height as me, but I imagine you as taller. So I just was like, Perry's like 6'4".
Nice. I wish.
Yeah. I wish I was 6'4", too. The other sound design note I have is just a tiny little detail of when we are walking back and forth to Digby's closet, I did something that I don't think anyone will notice, but the ambient background sound of the studio is three separate tracks. One is the traffic outside, one is room tone with ventilation, the other one is that ticking clock. And even though we were in the same space, when we walk from the studio area over to Digby's closet, each of those elements shifts. So probably the most noticeable one, if you can clock it, no pun intended, yeah, if the clock moves from being on the left when you're in the studio, and as we walk down the hallway, the clock has moved over to the right side because we've changed our location. So like the relative placement of the ambience, the window where we hear the traffic also moves, and it's very subtle, but it helps to make the spaces feel a little bit different.
It helps
in
sell
the same
it.
Building.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit. I would go back probably and agonize over those walk forward and back sequences even more if I had the time, but that's just a fun little technique that I wanted to share in case it sticks in anyone's brain and they find themselves designing a scene like that.
Well, and it makes total sense because all that would shift, right, in the real world. So you're having to play that game in your head about what would really happen if I was putting this on camera somehow.
Yeah, I think a lot in terms of camera. And that approach is fun. I've used that in a couple of pod cubes too that involve walking back and forth between places. Just having multiple ambience tracks instead of one and panning them from the get-go a bit so that way you can switch them around. That's all I got for sound design.
Hey, listeners. If you're like me and enjoy escaping to a real movie theater, then Regal Unlimited just makes sense. It's the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass that pays for itself in just two visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime with no blackout dates or restrictions. And your membership lets you get into premium format shows like IMAX and 4DX at a reduced cost. Plus, you'll save 10% on all non-alcoholic concessions. Regal Unlimited, it's the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass that pays for itself in just two visits. So, if you're planning on seeing a couple movies this month, join Regal Unlimited. Now is the best time as summer's coming up. Sign up now in the Regal app or on the website at regmovies.com/unlimited. And be sure to use the code FOLKLORE24 to get 10% off a 3-month subscription.
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
If anybody else is interested like in a podcast with really cool sound design, I've been getting into the Lovecraft Investigations by BBC.
Yeah, I've heard that's really good.
That has some of the best sound design that's not in your face. It's understated, but like when you listen to it, everything is intentional. I think the TV production quality sound design that you would expect, but without the picture.
From BBC Radio 4. The Lovecraft Investigations.
Okay, here's how it started.
We're calling it the case of Charles Dexter Ward.
A mystery that we figured was going to be intriguing. We didn't realize how dangerous it would get or how deep the rabbit hole went.
Go!
I'm excited to check that out.
Yeah. I mean, and there's one thing, it was in season one that like really sold me on it, because this one of the protagonists is down in a tunnel and she talks about getting more cramped, and she's doing one of these things kind of like we do, where you're talking into a voice recorder, and she's doing it, she mentions how cramped it is, and all of a sudden her voice is like right in the mic, and
nice.
It's like, you know, the entire room just like pulls in around her,
gets smaller and smaller.
It was so good.
I love that. That's because that's also the actor's mic technique. Like that's not something you can really easily fake, so that is really that's my favorite.
Yeah, everything was,
I can't
good
wait to check that
in
out
in that scene. And for the whole show, it's like in season four. Or so right now I'm in the middle of season three. And it's all so good from an understated sound design perspective. And even the stuff that's super in your face is really good. But the small decisions that I hear in that are what really sell me on the quality.
Man. Okay. I need to check that out. I need to get some inspiration.
Oh, I think you'd love it.
Narrative structure and how this episode fits in the season's scope. I mean, Perry is starting to lose grip on reality, ?
No, I'm not.
Or reality starting to lose grip on Perry.
I have a better grip on reality than I have ever had.
Digby's convinced that he's an artificial intelligence, so he has run away. Things are about to get weird.
And will this tie into season one at all?
Right. ? Who knows?
Hmm.
How does this all come together? Stay tuned. Tune in next week or the week after.
For the exciting conclusions, Digital Folklore Chronicles.
Anyway, voiceover and interviews. We pronounced John Loden's name wrong.
In the credits, I did, yeah. And I think probably in the Who Do We Have on Deck? Yeah, he says John Loden.
Yeah.
I say John Loden. I'm not sure who's right about that. I'm going to say me.
Well, I mean, okay, sure, that's a choice. I will abstain from weighing in.
You just say it with confidence.
When we recorded the script, you were like, Loden? And I was like, yeah, Loden. So I'm not guilt-free either.
No, I mean, he says his name Loden. I think I said Loden.
Or yeah, you said Loden. And then I was just like, yeah, that's right.
John,
I remember
we
you,
love you if you're listening to this. We love you and we care about the pronunciation of your name.
Yes.
Didn't care enough to go back and fix it.
Well, we also, you were in a hotel.
As I am now.
As you are now. Our recording session for that one was a little funky. You were like on the floor fully, though.
Yeah, speaking into a chaise lounge.
Yeah.
Chaise lounge. I don't know what the best way to say that is either, if I want to go full like uppity.
I thought it was chaise long, but I'm thinking of that song by the band Wet Leg.
Yeah, speaking into a chaise lounge.
Yeah, I'm speaking into a chaise lounge. I thought that's one of those places in the airport you can only get in if you're in the special club, right?
Oh, yeah. The American Express Centurion Club.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Chase should really get on that and make the Chase Lounge, because that would be pretty good.
They should make the Discover Lounge. People would go in there not knowing what to expect.
I did have one thing to say about John Loden. I had not seen his personal website until after the episode was going up and I was making sure I had the links right. John's website's really cool, and he's into like a lot of stuff, like web design and just all sorts of different technology. And
he's a true geek.
Yeah, he really is. He's very multifaceted. I would really recommend looking into other stuff that John has done. There's a link in the show notes of the episode, and probably of this one too.
And that whole discipline, I mean, you like hear his background. He's got like Army intelligence officer and everything else. And he's a folklore professor, but is in this discipline of social informatics and looking
and also
at,
teaches English.
Yeah. Super cool.
John's very interesting.
Well, and we first reached out to try to interview John. He's like, yeah, I'm a better interviewer than a guest. And he comes in and we interview him. And like, actually, we did a pre-interview and talked to him for like an hour and a half. And we're like, I wish we just recorded that.
Yeah.
And then we talked to him again, recorded it. And it was amazing the second time.
Yeah.
And I don't think we touched on like, but 40% of what we touched on the first time.
John was great. He's someone I would like to see if we can have make a reappearance if we cover AI again, or an update on his conspiracy bot.
Yeah.
So, fun facts. I have one. Do you have one?
I will think of mine while you do yours.
Oh, mine's going to be real short, so no pressure, but here's my fun fact. Digby reciting binary was very funny to me, and the binary was also very fun.
Okay. My fun fact is that there are binary translators that you can find online.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
For people who are astute, they might be able to get something fun.
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. Or you can just waste some time.
It's only ones and zeros, but getting them in the right order is the tricky bit.
Okay. We have a listener comment that came in on Spotify. These come in, for those of you that don't know, Spotify has like these question and answer things, and you can poll people in the most polite way possible as they listen to the episodes. And the one thing that I don't like about the way Spotify does this is you get these comments and there's no way to reply to them. There's no way to create threads with them. You just get the opportunity to publish the ones that you like and agree with. And so we got one over the past couple weeks. And I think it was really cool because this was Danielle that left a comment. And Danielle says, "This was great. Really like the after shows as much as the main content. Keep it up." And I thought that that was great because both Mason and I wonder every now and then if like people get as much out of these after episode discussions as they get in the main, what people like more about each episode type and all of that. And we just want to make sure we're not cluttering somebody's feed with stuff that they don't want to listen to. So it is good to know that people are listening to these and enjoying what we bring.
Yeah. No, that makes me feel really good. Cause I wonder like, do people want, if I'm getting nerdy about sound design or something, do people want to know that?
We know Matthew listens because he tells us what he pulls out and likes and doesn't like. But are there any other people listening? We know that at least Danielle is listening. So thank you.
Yes. And Dorian.
Yeah. And Dorian. Dorian is listening.
Who just got the Digby plushie that you sent.
He did.
I saw it in our Discord.
Had a great, great photo.
If y'all are not in our Discord, you should get there. There's an invite in the show notes.
We also do know now that Dorian's cat really likes the Digby plushie and has stolen it at least a couple times.
Yes. Yeah, it arrived today and apparently the cat has already tried to steal it like 3 times.
Right.
As is the cat's right.
It is.
What to look for in the next episode? I think the answer to that question is Digby. We got to find Digby.
That was super sad.
Yeah, that was sad.
Like, I remember reading the script and then the couple times that we went through the script and read it too, just you hit Digby's lines in that and you actually feel for Digby. You understand?
Yeah.
Like that situation of just not knowing who you are, having an identity crisis, kind of this, it really resembles, I think, the crisis that a lot of us go through like in junior high and high school when we're trying to understand who we are.
I was going to say, I'm pulling from like high school me for like Digby.
Whenever
I've been writing Digby's lines, I'm trying to think of like, what would I be like in high school?
And you get to that scene where he's like packing his backpack and you don't necessarily know what's about to go on. But then you get the letter and it's like, oh man, wow.
I kept trying to write that scene so long and ended up cutting just basically everything until it was just what it was. And I think it ended up all right.
Yeah.
I was a little worried because there's so little between the two interviews of that episode that the structure was weird. But I was like, it felt like it flowed better when it was shorter than if that had gone on for too long.
I have a hard time imagining it in the long form now, which I guess is a good thing. Because I think it was good that it was a little bit mysterious.
Yeah, because I want to just like reveal all the eggs in the basket. But
I mean, you could have really tortured people with it, I guess, if you had some internal monologue. But
I was thinking of like some Mandela stuff, too, where he's like talking about these things he's like packed that are these weird artifacts and stuff and talking about memories he had and stuff he missed from us.
Mm.
But then it was a lot.
Yeah. But that last scene where we realize that he's kind of left a note and all that actually hit well, I think.
Yeah, that worked. Your ad lib in that scene killed me while I was editing it, and it still does. I think it's my favorite line.
Was that? Oh, he said love.
Yeah, and it just like and I stepped on you. The timing of that. I mean, I changed the timing in post because you cracked me up when we were recording, but the way that it's timed and your delivery on that, where it's like, love Digby. And you're like, oh, he said love. And I'm like, he's gone. That I really liked that.
Well, I remember just that striking me in the, like hitting in such a real way, reading the script and then going, oh, it's a raccoon. This is like on the face of it. When you really think about it, it's absurd. but at the same time, it's really cute. And you hit these things like in real life where these little details of somebody's word choice actually make everything so much more important. And I thought that where it said love Digby actually hits like that. It means something completely different than if he just said Digby or left it unsigned.
Yeah. Yeah, no, because he's, you know, he loves us.
Or
he's
even your friend, Digby, you know? I think saying love Digby hits differently.
But you saying it in the episode also is very funny. Oh, he said love. Oh, that was good. And that was not in the script. That was really funny.
Yeah, I think that and like the Google Maps thing, those were the two bits that weren't in the script.
Yeah, those were the only ad libs in this episode.
I think so. Yeah, we had a couple others that didn't make the cut.
Yeah, I even cut like some lines that were in the script for time. It was just like, this feels better without this.
Right. Both of the interviews were a little bit longer than we usually target for these, but they were both super important and on topic for the most part.
Yeah, that episode, the narrative part of it was far shorter. Like it was only 1,500 words versus I usually write about 6,000 words or 3,000 words. 6,000 was the maximum target.
Yeah, 6,000 is a lot of words.
Yeah. But this one was only like 1,400.
And it snapped. It was good.
Yeah, it worked well.
I will say that one of the people that we interviewed in the next episode came up with some of the best ad-libs that we've ever had.
Yes. Actually, yeah. The a folklorist that we've talked about in the show, but not yet talked to, is someone we interviewed in the next episode. And they gave a really good acting performance.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for you to hear
it. High school theater worked.
Yeah, when we recorded with this person, we were like, do you feel comfortable doing this? I've written you a fair few lines. And they were like, well, we'll see what 4 years of high school theater does. And then they crushed it. It's good. And the person who it is, I think you're going to be really excited when you hear it.
Yeah, it was super fun. We were both surprised at it. And there's a little bit of a sing-along part with it, if it makes
it was
the
very,
cut.
Yeah.
I'm sure it will.
It was, there's no way that's not getting in. I will rewrite everything to make sure we keep that.
Yeah.
It's going to be very good. I'm really excited.
All right. And with that, I think we've hit our time for this. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We will catch you later.
Bye.
I'm Perry Carpenter.
And I'm Mason Amadeus.
And this is Digital Folklore.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.